Are you looking to give your immune system a boost? This is Dr. Ronald Hoffman with a natural solution from Future Farm Botanicals, liquid wild oil of oregano with rosemary extract and natural honey flavor. Future Farm's wild oil of oregano supports a variety of health benefits, including antimicrobial effects, as well as supporting the immune system. Plus, Future Farm is the first ever to formulate wild oil of oregano with rosemary. Rosemary aids circulation, helps alleviate muscle pain, improves memory, and also gives your immune system a boost. The natural honey flavor enhances the taste while still giving you all of the benefits. Future Farm sources this product from the Mediterranean and produces it in the United States. For more information and to order, call 888-841-7216, 888-841-7216, or go to myfuturefarm.com/Hoffman. That's Future, P-H-A-R-M, myfuturefarm.com/Hoffman. Wild oil of oregano is all natural, science-based, and works without adverse side effects. MyFutureFarm.com/Hoffman. Welcome back to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, today with the co-author of a great new book. It's entitled, What's Making Our Children Sick? It addresses the childhood epidemics of neurological disorders like autism, attention deficit disorder, bipolar disorder, as well as the epidemics of obesity, autoimmune disease, kids being sick all the time with just ordinary colds and flus requiring antibiotics, and asthma. All these are signs that maybe we've taken a wrong turn in our current paradigm of child care. Yes, we can treat some of the killer diseases of the past, but all kinds of chronic diseases are emerging. And that's what the theme of the book is, how industrial food is causing an epidemic of chronic illness and what parents and doctors can do about it. So back to Dr. Michelle Perro. Dr. Perro is a veteran pediatrician. Originally trained here in New York at some of the institutions which I trained at. She was at NYU, and she has been an integrative physician at the Institute for Health and Healing, part of Sutter Pacific Medical Center. I guess that's out in the Bay Area. And so, Dr. Perro, we're talking about GMOs. Now, first of all, we've explained in part one that GMOs allow farmers. And it's no longer we think of individual farmers, you know, like farmers of old. Actually, now we're talking about big agricultural concerns that literally drench their crops in pesticides because they know that GMO organisms are resistant to pesticides and herbicides, and they won't die. So the products that come to the marketplace may actually have high levels of glyphosate. In fact, I recently saw a bunch of studies that show that virtually everybody in America has high levels of glyphosate in their body at this point. And kids being particularly vulnerable to the effects of chemical toxicity, that's not good news. But there are some other aspects to this is that, you know, so there some of the GMOs actually may have allergic potential because they're sort of weird hybrids of different organisms that have been genetically engineered. So when you think you're getting one food, you may be actually getting a combination of genetic material from other foods that may raise your potential for allergies. So there may be new novel genetic material. We don't even know what that genetic material does when humans are subjected to it. Is that correct?
Dr. Hoffman, you're right on. Actually, Dr. Belinda Martineau, she is a PhD researcher from UC Davis, looked at this when she brought out the Flavor Saver tomato many years ago. Mm-hmm. It was a tomato that was supposed to have a shelf life of 3 months. And what she reported was like, hey, wait a minute, this stuff is not safe to bring out because there are all these rogue proteins that are being developed mm-hmm. through the genetic modification process of unintended consequence. They weren't supposed to be there. And that tomato got pulled off the market. Fast forward to 2017, they are introducing something called the Impossible Burger, which is a vegetarian burger. Right. It's been genetically modified from soy nodule.
That's perfect for like the natural foods marketplace. A lot of people would embrace that. They say, well, it's great. It's natural. It's vegan. It's organic, blah, blah, blah. But think again.
But But once again, so it's interesting. It's not organic. I'm sure they use genetically modified soy because they don't say it's an organic soy. Right. And they use a genetically modified yeast to produce this leg hemoglobin, which makes this vegetarian burger taste like meat. Okay? After all the millennials saw Cowspiracy, nobody wants to eat cows, and we can talk about vegetarianism. And so I'm thinking, well, let's look at the data. And it's hard for me to find a lot of data on this product, but lo and behold, they report 46 novel proteins during this modification process, proteins that have not been described, brand new proteins. Now, we have evolved with our food. You know, over the millennial years, we evolved with our food so that we recognize it and we can break it down. If our bodies don't recognize these new proteins, we can see them as foreign antigens and make an immune reaction.
Yeah. But, you know, I think we're all just engaged in a giant experiment. We're the guinea pigs. And, you know, we're going to have to pass the bill to find out what's in the bill, you know, so to speak. to quote one of your legislators out there on the West Coast, you know, I mean, literally, it's an experiment because we don't really know what the long-term consequences of that might be. I think there's an analogy here to the use of artificial sweeteners, which were introduced in the 70s and 80s. Actually, before that, there were some artificial sweeteners, but then we had NutraSweet. And I was, been a long-term opponent, you know, for decades, in fact, debated some of the scientific people who were sent my way from Searle, a company that made NutraSweet in the day. And I said, you know, we don't know what the long-term effects of this will be. And they said, well, it's perfectly safe. The tests show it's fine. But now we're, you know, decades hence, we're discovering their microbiome effects. They damage the microbiome. A new study suggests that they're obesogenic, that they cause fat cells to accumulate fat deposition. This is just in. And, you know, so maybe, just maybe, we'll discover this long-term, or maybe we won't even discover it because there'll be so many environmental factors that'll be conspiring to make us sick that we'll say, well, you know, maybe it's the cosmic radiation, maybe it's global warming, maybe, you know, who knows, you know, what's causing this.
And, you know, that makes us a very good point. Well, you know, we are a depository for war chemicals. I often feel that. And aspartame being one of those war chemicals that, oh, it's not a war chemical. Oh, let's put it in our food supply. It's like thinking, how about we just get rid of it? So I've thought of that before myself, Dr. Hoffman. What are we doing with this stuff? What's another huge concern of mine is that in this book, we really focus on food. You know, kids eat 3, 4, 5 times a day. Sometimes I eat 6 times a day. So they eat a lot. We looked at the food, and that's what we focus on. However, there are no studies on polychemistry, polypharmacy, polytoxicology, that when these things are coupled together, and what's that effect? So when you have GMOs, pesticides, and parabens, styrenes, plastics, xylene, toluene, all together, what effect does that have on children's health, their gut, their brain? And that's not been addressed at all. And we know babies are born pre-polluted. That's been looked at. Environmental Working Group did that great study years ago looking at those babies, small number of babies, but they all had over 200 chemicals, 270 chemicals. Mm. And I'm thinking, what are we doing with this chemical soup that we're bathing our children in and ourselves?
Mm-hmm. And one other issue with potential concern with GMOs is BT. Can you explain what BT is? Bacillus thuringiensis. I have a little trouble pronouncing it.
So do I. I wish there was any other name of that. I just call it BT. Yeah. It's an organism that has been used as a natural pesticide that farmers have used for decades on when you can spray on a plant. Mm-hmm. It kills the pest, the insect pest, and then you can wash it off. Mm-hmm. But through the genetic modification process, we've now incorporated through a modified technique that every plant cell now makes that BT. And so each plant cell of your corn, of your BT corn, actually is a pesticide. It's not a food anymore. It's an actual pesticide. Mm-hmm. And so that when the insect eats the corn, the corn borer or whatever organism we're trying to target, their stomachs explode. Mm-hmm. We were told that this BT corn would not affect humans because of the acidity of our
gut. It only affects invertebrates, supposedly, like insects.
Supposedly.
Yeah.
And, you know, they have a different pH of their gut. Ours is acidic, theirs is not.
Okay.
And when it affects us, that was one theory. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I also think about, well, every other adult is on some kind of acid blocker, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't, and you know, we all know that the acidity of everyone goes down with aging. So are we even able to break down the BT?
Mm-hmm.
There's only one study I know that came out of Canada looking at BT, and they found BT circulating in fetal blood and maternal blood, a study out of Quebec.
Mm-hmm.
And there are no other studies that I know about it. So, and what does it do? It punches holes in the insect, in the gut of insects.
Mm-hmm.
So what it's doing in us, I'm not clear.
Yeah.
I don't know.
And there's also, some people have speculated that, you know, you're playing genetic roulette because you're introducing genes, and we know that the genes of bacteria swap genes, and you know, that's how they acquire antibiotic resistance very, very quickly. You know, a few evolve to develop resistance, and then they kind of, that's like sort of bacterial sex, you know, like Plato's retreat for bacteria. They kind of swap their genetic material. But I mean, and this is one theory, and it's been challenged that some of this new genetic material that's introduced by technology in these foods can be transferred to the bacteria in our microbiome and alter their characteristics. Is that even plausible?
It is plausible. From what I've read, that these plasmids, these little genes can go back and forth. Our microbiome are very adaptable, and we can swap out. And we don't know the untoward effects. So they create one insertion of a gene in a plant, but then there's a downstream effect that of replications of this new change genetic sequence, which has not been studied. And what's happening also is, because of resistance and other things, they're stacking genetic traits that they're modifying. So there are more complicated genetic gene traits being stacked, and more toxic pesticides being introduced, like dicamba, for example, that's causing massive problems in croplands right now because of unintended drift and side effects on non-intended crops. Big problem in the Midwest.
Mm-hmm.
And so what's also concerning, Ronald, and is something that we've been watching in our genetic GM community, is gene editing and CRISPR technologies, newer gene.
Yep.
And those scientists are introducing those technologies. They want to absolutely silence certain genes completely in plants, and that would eliminate certain genes completely. And what those effects are, you could literally wipe out a certain kind of mosquito. But every time we do something like that, there may be an unintended consequence in the web, in the bigger web of our biological web, whether it's our own internal web or our external environment, our ecosystem. And we talk a lot about that in the book, about the balance between the internal and external world. Ecomedicine is what we call it.
Mm-hmm. And I've also heard it said that the soil has a microbiome. I mean, the soil, you know, soil is dirty. It's got bacteria in it. But the balance of bacteria in the soil may be responsible for some of the beneficial characteristics of the produce. Because for example, I was talking to a Dr. Bielman the other day, Dr. Robert Bielman, who is a mushroom expert. He said, well, they use a lot of fungicides sometimes in the soil, and that may cause, you know, you can grow the plants on the soil, but that may reduce the synthesis of some important compounds like ergothionine. We talked a little bit about the high content of ergothionine in mushrooms. But if you put fungicide in the soil, well, you know, mushrooms are a fungus, then that's why they make a lot of ergothionine. If there's no fungal organisms in the soil, then your plants aren't going to have the same, the plants will grow, they'll be able to grow, but they won't offer the same nutritional value to people. So, you know, that's another knock against GMOs. It's indirect. It's not that so much specifically the toxicity of the GMOs, but what they do to the nutritional value of the food.
Well, that is such a good point, because you're only as healthy as your soil. Let them eat dirt. You know, and Daphne Miller wrote a great book about the soil. There's been a lot of great books on soil and how important it is. And you're right, there are other things being sprayed on the soil that's killing off the microbiome. Some of the soil, even that organics are grown in, is literally just without any any health. You know, the soil's deplete of health, and you need a robust microbiome to, you know, for nutrients, for our own nutrients. And so we can't forget that glyphosate, which, you know, is in just about everything we eat if it's not organic, was patented in 2002 as an antibiotic. And so by Monsanto. So it's not been, I haven't seen any human literature on the effect, the microbial effect of glyphosate on the microbiome. Yeah. I've seen a chicken study out of Germany, but nothing in humans. And so we know, you know, your guests know that the microbiome is the key, one of the key, you know, researched items right now for sustaining good health.
Well, okay, so this, we've sort of laid the groundwork in terms of theory that all this stuff is bad. But you, with your experience in working with kids with complex medical conditions, and the book has case studies and examples of how you know, radical diet transformation has really turned kids' health around. Can you give us some examples of how that, you know, what that looks like?
Yeah, we're getting into the weeds now, Dr. Hoffman, no pun intended.
Yeah.
So you know, organic food, that's, you know, the cornerstone of the beginning of every treatment plan I do with a family. So I've been queried about this before. Do you mean to say, Dr. Perro, you just change the kid's diet who has ulcerative colitis and they get better? And
this
I have to say, absolutely not.
Too good to be true propositions, right?
It is too good to be true because, like you, I'm an integrative physician. I have to bring in every tool I know how to use to turn some of these kids around. They're so sick. These are the sickest kids I've ever seen. My practice was nothing but complex, chronically ill children, and they could be turned around, and I did many, many things. So I could never say, yes, it was the food, because I was doing a lot of things at once, because children are not lab rats. I'm not conducting a science experiment when I treat a sick kid. However, what I did notice, which was fascinating, was that siblings' parents were getting better, and they were not my patients. And my best case was a family out of a growing region of California, heavily sprayed, and the dad only had 20% kidney function. And his mom had it, his brother had it, his whole family had it, and the nephrologist said, oh, it's genetic. Well, he changed his diet to organic, and that's all he did. He wasn't my patient, as I treated his son with autism, very severe autism. And lo and behold, 7 or 8 months later, he had 80% kidney function back.
Wow.
And I thought, whoa, okay, hold on. He took nothing. No B12, no, you know, none of my NAC, no detoxifiers, no methylators, nothing. All he did was organic food. He stopped eating out. And that's one of my best cases. And I have many less impressive cases than those, and we go into them in the book. But that dad gave me so much hope and so much hope to my other patients.
Indeed. Well, so let's provide you know, a thumbnail action plan for parents. Yes, the book will increase our awareness of these hazards, but what are some simple measures that parents can undertake? Say, you know, starting with the prenatal period, and then you know, looking, you know, towards early infancy and toddlerhood.
You bring up an excellent point, and this is an area I've been honing on in the past year, is prenatal cleanup. And so what I counsel people to do prior to getting pregnant, they, if they can, take 6 months to clear out both partners, male, female, clean out. And I change their diets. I do use a lot of supplements, herbs, homeopathics in my practice, but I have, and it's individualized. You know, some people don't need as an intensive clean out. Some people need more. But I just start with, can you eat organic food? Can you drink filtered water? And so decrease your internal toxic load and decrease your external toxic load. Take your shoes up at the door. Change your cleaning products. And I refer patients to all sorts of websites and podcasts like yours, et cetera, et cetera. So if the parents are sick, like, oh, I have family members who say who can't get pregnant and they ask me for help, it's like, well, you have an autoimmune disease. We cannot get you healthy until we fix your autoimmunity. Don't get pregnant yet. So let's see if we, and I treat those patients for a year or so first, if we can wait, if we have time. And I treat them and I have my toolbox that I use. So what I tell parents, what I tell my families is we have to do prenatal cleanup. That's individualized. Moms, of course, to nurse, and also not to detox while they're nursing, because moms will offload, especially on the first baby.
Right.
So we don't want, if once they're pregnant, I don't do a lot of detoxing. I have mom eat as well as she can, but I don't detox at that point. Once the baby's born, all organic, And if the mom can't nurse for any reason, then I switch to only organic formula. I bring in probiotics very early, especially for C-section babies mm-hmm. who don't acquire the normal microbiome. Or I have mom, you know, kind of cover the baby's face with vaginal flora after a C-section. Mm-hmm. And so they can, you know, be colonized with vaginal flora and not skin flora.
That's so-called vaginal seeding, it's referred to.
Thank you. Vaginal seeding. I like that term. I didn't know that's what it's called. We vaginally seed their little faces. And then all organic food, that's a must. I do filtered water, and I refer parents for sites on which system to get, depending on their budget and their time. And I talk about, I go hard on what products to use for cleaning, what cosmetics to use, what care products to use, and if I have them on supplements, which most of my patients are on some kind of a supplement, by the way, I use the cleanest organic supplements I can get my hands on. I'm very particular about what I refer to in my green pharmacy, which I use. I believe most of us do need supplements now. Our food is not nutritionally equivalent, and I get kids on supplements. So these, I know, are kind of gross guidelines, but mm-hmm. that's just to give you an idea how I start.
What are some of the key supplements that kids can benefit from?
Okay, this is good. I'm happy to share that with you. So I'm a big fan of the methyl B12 methylfolates for children, mm-hmm. Especially children who run into problems. They often have trouble with the MTHFR gene either being heterozygous or homozygous, mm-hmm. and they have trouble with phase 1 or phase 2 with detoxification of the liver. And those are easy supplements to give because, remember, children are often picky. And those with neurocognitive dysfunction, like autistic spectrum disorder, are extremely picky, and you can't get these things in them. It becomes a nightmare. These methyl B12 come as little candies, and they're chewable. Yum. Okay, vitamin D. Mm-hmm. I like to use liposomal products because they get into cells better. I like to use ones that are oil-based and with vitamin K2, and there are many companies that sell them. I'm not pushing any company right now, and I get vitamin D, and I get their levels up, especially who kids who get sick all the time.
Mm-hmm. Really helpful for immunity, but also for autoimmunity, it turns out.
And for cancer.
Indeed,
yes.
Yeah.
I mean, I have a dog with lymphoma now, and I have her on high-dose vitamin D.
Yes.
So, yes. I'd like to check, sometimes I'll do a nutrition assessment through Genova or some other labs. Mm-hmm. I like to look at a nutrient profile. If we can't get that for any reason, I'll order just from routine labs and red blood cell, magnesium, and zinc levels. And if those are low, that usually reflects other metals and minerals are low. And those are key for brain function. And I will start them on a organic mineral and vitamin supplement. I try to use food-based ones when I can. Sometimes I can't. And I have a few companies that I use that make organic products. And I try to get them in a form that kids will take. Good luck. Right? Mm-hmm. And so I get them on a multivitamin, which I like. So multivitamin, I got their mineral, I got their methyl B12, methylfolate, I've got their vitamin D going, probiotics. I'd say all my patients are on probiotics. And I try to pick the ones that are based on the results of their PCR analysis, either through Genova's when I use GI Corefex, but they can also get it done now through Ubiome.
Yes.
If their insurance will cover that.
Relatively inexpensive, yeah. And you know,
yes.
You can actually do it independent of a physician, as a self-referral. You can just get it done and then have it.
Yeah, and then I look at those. I love looking at the PCRs and seeing what's in there. Mm-hmm. And then I select various organisms depending on what they've got. And that's where the literature is going. So they have eczema or they have diabetes. I might mm-hmm. bring in something else. Or if I see that they have no lactobacilli, I up their lactobacilli. And then I've learned about timing supplements, when to give them. So it doesn't seem like you should take them any time. Then I try to time them with the various therapies I'm using, not trying to make moms and dads' lives miserable from all this. You have to, you know, not make people neurotic and crazy.
Yeah.
And I do the probiotics are easy to give. They don't taste like anything. And I put those in smoothies, and I tend to go really high, especially on gut disorders. I give a lot of probiotics. So, and then I'll bring in various herbs. I do lots of green smoothies, and then I do a lot of German biologic medicine, uh-huh. which treat extracellular matrices, and I clean out and do drainage of the extracellular matrix.
That's a popular term in European homeopathy, drainage, you know.
Oh, I'm a big fan. I lecture for drainage companies quite a bit. That's one of my passions is drainage medicine, and I use it a lot for treatment and detox and healing leaky gut. It's one of my cornerstone of therapy.
Well, it sounds like a very comprehensive program, but it all starts with diet. That's ultra important, and lifestyle, and certainly the use of non-toxic products, and we can go a long way to stemming the tide of childhood epidemics, and you dub this term eco-medicine. This is something that you call for in the book.
If I could see anything that would happen, I would love to see our colleagues, Dr. Hoffman, you and I are probably similarly trained for a similar era. If this stuff is out there, this is not hard to get a hold of, and see if our colleagues would at least be willing to listen to some of this stuff, expand their own toolboxes, do some simple things, simple testing, and start bringing this to their patients. Their patients want this. Their patients need it. And this is one of our goals in the book, is to kind of bring this idea of we need to shift this paradigm of how we do medicine into all conventional clinics. I don't think this is hard to do by balancing both our internal and external world and practice literally functional medicine, I mean, or integrated medicine, whatever terminology you like to use. This is a goal that Dr. Adams and I have, is to get this into the hands of med students, clinicians, nurse practitioners, grandmas.
Well, you've laid out the case very nicely in the book. The book's entitled, What's Making Our Children Sick? How Industrial Food is Causing an Epidemic of Chronic Illness and What Parents and Doctors Can Do About It. More details, lots of specifics in the book. Congratulations, and thank you very much for joining us, Dr. Michelle Perro. It's been a pleasure talking to you.
Thank you, Dr. Hoffman, and I appreciate being here with you today, as well as your own incredible work in the world of functional medicine. I've been a fan of your show and your own book, so thank you as well.
Well, that's great. We're all just trying to get the word out, and you're doing an admirable job of it.
One podcast at a time. Yes, thank you.
Okay. Thank you so much. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.